Okay, welcome back to Deep Thoughts. Today we're going to do a user request, because I think it's a good one, and it's one I mentioned on the show quite a bit. And I'm debating on what to call this, because I could call it Magna Carta, and just go through the history of Magna Carta. And a concept that is not well known to folks called the straw man theory. And we're going to get to all those things. But what it's really about is the sovereign freedom of man and sort of how we've been duped. We've been duped so hardcore, it is crazy. The Romans used to have a saying that said, "Let those who could be deceived be deceived." And I think that's sort of how the world works from the top down. Unfortunately, the gullibility that is created to allow one to be deceived is now institutionalized into the minds of most humans. So no one really has a chance. I mean, you have to luck out. You got to know some people that are willing to talk some sense into you, being an MK Ultra radio subscriber. Otherwise, you're going to be just lost in the world. You won't know who you are as a human being. You won't know anything about how you exist on the planet legally. And today we're going to go through that. But as I look at things, I wanted to share with you, because I'm always telling you guys to look at things from a 90-degree angle, right? So this is the normal path of thinking, and every once in a while you need to do one of those, or you need to branch out, right? Here's how I do that with this particular subject. So one could just rifle down the history of people looking for their rights, but for me it's more interesting to find out, how the hell did we get here? What got us to this point where we lost the freedoms that are imbued on us by merely existing, at least in human form, right? And so my brain goes all the way back to the inception of mankind. It's not important how we got here, but let's just throw out the three that we always talk about on the show. God put you here. Adam and Eve, you crawled out of the tree like a monkey, or you were spliced / dropped off by aliens. Doesn't matter. At a really short period of time, we started living on our own, and we started trying to figure out how to exist on this planet. Now, obviously, I'm going to speculate, because that's all I got. Once I get the time machine, we'll make much better episodes, but I'm still raising the money. I did a show on tribalism, which is, like I've said before, it's probably some of my best work. It's in audio form on this site under essay. And this sort of starts out where the big question we're trying to answer is, where does man lose his power? When is the moment when man starts to completely lose his sovereignty? And I think it's a very complex situation, because you have your bully factor, or someone simply bigger than other human beings, and because he can swing a big club, quite literally, all right, he can stop any man from giving him shit, and he can have any woman that he wants in the village. And that's where survival of the fittest was well understood by the cavemen way before Darwin pulled his giant hack, stealing De Lamarck stuff, right? Then you have your academic. I know how to build a water well, and you need water. You're tired of going down to the river and getting it. You're tired of, you know, rivers running dry and everyone dying. So you want to have a well that's protected. It's a stream of water underneath the earth. I'm going to use a divining rod to figure out what the electricity comes up from the well of water, which is like I said, the aqua ravine that the pyramids are built on. It really works, okay? If nothing else, the crust loses its density because there's a water passage in there and more of the electricity from the earth pushes through. All right. So you protect that guy who knows that stuff. If you kill him or hurt him, you're screwed. Right? Maybe if he's going to go off to the tribe that's a bunch of assholes and build them a well, maybe you kill him. But other than that, you covet that person's knowledge. And if the person's that smart, they probably know how to do a lot of other things. Build a granary. Build you a hut that's not made out of mud, made out of rocks. Build you a roof that's so strong you could put animals on top, which used to be the case. Can you imagine that? So I think the reason why I'm mentioning this past is that I think at some point we became naturally subjugated to each other. We relied on each other for things, and we probably kept a fairly decent rapport with each other, minus tiny skirmishes and that sort of thing. But we kept a good rapport with each other until one person learned about greed. You know, little kids, they always want everything too. You know, they you know, if you get them something that they want to keep all of it and not share it. And a parent has to break it out of the child. If you try to get food from a dog, you'll see dogs get quote-unquote greedy. Even, you know, it's that bone. It's that same thing where they're willing to bite your hand off. And it's because in a sense of food, it's an imperative to exist. But in the sense of other elective things, well, you just have more than someone else. And the second that a guy got a girl's attention by having gold or by having some item in the world, men became evil. I'm not blaming women by any stretch. I'm just saying, once you realized you could manipulate the mind of someone else by having a possession, maybe even your dude buddies think you're great because you've pounded out a wheel, you know? And you're going to do three more, and you're going to have a little buggy on your hands, a little Fred Flintstone action there, right? You start gaining status and gaining credibility with your people, which, without doing some magic trick, it's not going to come naturally. And I've tried to split the atom of greed several times. My buddy Robert Llewellyn and I in the UK, he started a book called Blue Helmet, which I took over. And I wrote an interesting passage, and the site's gone now offline, but I wrote a passage saying that it was sort of a Douglas Adams writing style. And so I created this race that essentially was the first race to stumble into greed. And since then, that just like Prometheus, was way before Prometheus ever came out, that gene of greed is spread all over the universe. And that's how we actually have greed. And it's, I feel like I'm not sure where it started other than just what I gave you, a benefit to having something and having a possession, whether it be knowledge in your mind or some physical item in the world. And because, again, there's some weird thing about human beings with shiny shit. I have it too. You know, if you look at a really polished, shiny bar of gold, man, it's just fascinating looking. Even beach glass is like crazy when it gets wet. I got a little jar of beach glass I collected, 20 years ago, 25 years ago in Oxnard, California. All these cool reds and blues, and when they dry in the bottle, you look at them and go, why am I saving that? That is ridiculous. Why I still save that? And you pour a few out in your hand 20 years later, and you get them wet in some water, and they just glisten, and you're like, oh, that's why I keep these things. They're shiny. There's charters in our programming, and I'm not quite sure why they exist, but they exist. You know, it's like seeing something shiny for some reason, like chrome for some guys is really big. I'm a chrome addict too. But it's just like the neural synaptical firing in the brain is the same as cocaine, right? All right, we're going to get focused here. We know of certain places in history where society was very regimented. The Sumerians, 4500 BC at a minimum, were so unbelievably well organized and amicable to each other that they had very peaceful, long stretches, you know, thousands of years of peace without any crazy manipulation and propaganda necessarily. You had merchants that they had money and they had ledgers, and farmers had, you know, almanacs on how the crops grow and when to grow them. You had people that had, they had hospitals that had medical regimens of what to feed you, what herbs to eat, and drink a beer at the end. It was almost always in the recipe. It was cool. How to make beer was in recipes. And this is if the mud tablets are actually untampered with, right? Something we can't really carbon date. We have few artifacts from this era. But then you move up to the Egyptians, and you have a very well-trackable society, right? And I won't go do a whole Egyptian digression, but you know that they were very civilized. They had temples and tombs and pyramids, which we think were, you know, power amplifiers. And they wrote poems and stories. And, you know, they were just in a beautiful, gorgeous society. They built temples that were really long, top-down views of the human body, where the brain had two different chambers. They actually believe in seven different chambers for the senses, and then the three hemispheres of the right, left brain, and subconscious. But they built the chest areas with a bunch of columns to symbolize the rib cage in the body, right? And they knew all the glands that run down the nervous system were very paramount to how we function in society. And that knowledge went off and created all the other Eurasian societies that, like, your Hindus and your Buddhists and everyone that worships the glandular system. Okay. So their knowledge of the world was utterly phenomenal. Now, we grew up, today, we're raised with the knowledge that the pyramids were built out of slave labor. And there are definitely some hieroglyphs where people seem to be being whipped into shape. Now, I think a lot of the people no longer believe that. The leading Egyptologists that are not listening to the Cairo Museum of Archaeology, they're off on their own using physics and electrical engineering and their own linguists to study all kinds of different associations and bring things together like never before. It might just be they had a penal system that if you broke the law, you had to do something. And these hieroglyphs may have just been, if they weren't forged, right? And I always think hieroglyphs that have black people in them or any derivative of black people, definitely not forged, because they would have been forged by Christians and they would have wiped out the race that they are most terrified of, right? But you may actually just be seeing prisoners who have done wrong. Maybe it was only for a day that they had to go lift rocks or whatever, or a week or a month or a year. But one thing doesn't automatically equal what it would equal today. You know, if anybody was being whipped today, they'd definitely be in trouble for some major reason or you know, maybe be a slave somewhere, right? But by the time we get to Rome, we no longer have a doubt as to how society ran. You can really look at the Sumerians and see that things got out of shape. Their poetry and their stories talked about, you know, these beings came out of the hills and reset their societies and returned to the hills. Whatever that is, right? Then you have the Egyptians. The Egyptians were the haves, and they kept getting torn apart by the have-nots who just figured out how to make weaponry. And again, you had a very peaceful society that wasn't really well armed. And so they were very easy to take over because in their brain, they couldn't imagine fighting these types of wars, even though they had skirmishes of their own. I think a lot of that history is super revisionistic. The menace uniting North and South, I don't know. There's a lot of questions in what the actual crowns mean on these actual pharaohs. By the time we get to Roman Empire, we know that there is massive, massive control. There is every form of repression, from taxation to slavery to, you know, someone being able to accuse you of something just to get you out of their way and you go off to prison. And this empire goes for a long, long time, right? It eventually turns into the Catholic Church. Literally, you just take history of Rome and then take the history of the Catholic Church. And as every senator disappeared, you had a saint pop up in the church. You know, I mean, this is this beautiful transformation of power, just this handoff as they said, oh, no, we're not doing that anymore. That's not the scam anymore. The people tax themselves now because we've convinced them to do it by telling him this story. So no longer do the legions need to pound it out of them. They do it because God said they should. And we're going to run this whole crusade thing first to get a bunch of people in war to fight for this cause that they barely understand. And then after that, we're going to go through inquisitions to force their minds into believing this stuff. And 1,000 years from now, they won't know the difference. Bingo, right? But during this era, the way I like to look at the Roman Empire and sort of the lunacy out of Europe, and I don't mean the people, I just mean the monarch class structure that developed and evolved over time. It's really brute force bullying that makes everything we're about to talk about happen. And so on the subject of bullying, right, you know, we're told now to cower away from defending ourselves. You're told that having a gun to protect yourself is a bad thing. Like you're an asshole if you have a gun. But our armies have guns. Our politicians have guns. All the illegal criminals out there, illegal criminals. Is there good criminals? No, all the criminals out there have guns. But you're an asshole if you want to defend yourself from these odds. It's really strange. But every one of us has had certain levels of brainwashing to give up these sorts of things. And that's what this show's about, to stick it back in your brain and go, hey, don't forget humanity. All right? So Rome ruled with an iron fist. If any culture ruled with an iron fist, it's Rome. The amount of sheer history of individuals that did not want to do what Rome told them to do, and they were persecuted or murdered because of what their country wanted them to do and that they didn't want to do, is off the chain. And what's kind of funny is you look at other cultures, like your Genghis Khans that come across Asia and scream through Eurasia and take over lots of Europe, they were having a blast. They were in charge. They were a unified force. I'm sure they had, you know, people get punished here and there, but these people were into it, man. And Rome just had some crazy white people at the top with, amazing greed and this need to conquer, and they ran around. Now, I may not even exist if they hadn't done what they'd done, being a white person, right? So I may owe my lineage to this defense of Europe, because at times the Muslim nations had almost completely infiltrated and taken over Europe. It's happening again right now, right? I'm not saying that there's a nefarious thing behind it. I'm just saying it's happening. The EU is ensuring that every single country, and forget all this immigration stuff. I made a comment in one of the previous episodes about, this immigration thing, but the Muslim infiltration of Europe has been going on for a decade at least. And they're sweet people, nice people, but, at some point the country needs to figure out whether or not they want to give up all of their genetic predispositions, And I think they're coming to grips with this, but just remember, the European Union, that's supposed to be this godsend to the European people, has done no good to any European nation since its existence. It's brought down the GDP benefits to the most powerful country over there, which is Germany. And it's taken all these countries with debt issues and turned them into Cyprus's and Greece. I think Iceland's the only one kind of laughing their head off over there. But just because they're small and insignificant that they get to do what they do. If they were a big player, they'd be destroyed. There'd be a whole Syrian thing over there, right? So with Rome, we had Caesars. And it was not quite the same as a monarch, right? Because the Caesars took a lot of heat. It was almost a bit like what we have today, where they're installed. They have faux power. Right. If you think that the Caesars you've read about in history made all their own sovereign decisions, you are sadly mistaken. There was a Senate. There were people that would kill you. And that's why as soon as Julius Caesar knocked up the Roman white girl known as Cleopatra, Ptolemy the Ninth, he was in trouble. He tried to smuggle her into, off to the shoot of Rome to hide her while she had this kid. And all hell broke loose. I think, one, he slept with the woman. I think that was probably one of the biggest rules he broke with the Caesars. But at this time in society, we had two types of people. And maybe there was an MKUltra listener back then. But you have someone who wants to be told what to do, and then you have someone who wants to tell people what to do. And there's probably a couple people in the middle that are like, just leave me alone. I'm going to do my own thing. But these other two forces were able to create this apparatus around mankind whereby mankind from, let's just go around the fable time of Christ all the way up to 1000 AD, stuff got completely and utterly out of control. Humanity walked around in a state of complete fear. Because you never know when someone's going to walk through your farm and say, put down your backhoe, you need to come with us on a crusade. And the guy says, I don't want to have anything to do with you. I got a brand new child there, four other kids in the house, and or working the farm or whatever, and all I can do is lose everything I own by following you into war. And they said, tough shit, you got to come with us. Otherwise, we're going to hit you over the head and you're going to have the problem instantaneously that you fear you might have if you don't, if you go with us, right? So this was bullying on a level that was insane. And ironically, it was you know, the Crusades are driven by popes. Popes that would divvy out support to the kings to get their conscripts, their people, to support them. And this is where we get into the history of Magna Carta. So Magna Carta was put in place in 1215 by King John. And it was it wasn't just like he had this idea and he goes, hey, I'm just going to give you all your rights. It's going to be great. King John is not the hero, even though the way that they write it in Wikipedia is absolutely hilarious. You have what's called rebel barons, right? This is great. The guys that demanded and drafted up, which I believe was called like the Articles of a Baron or something like that. These barons, right? You know what a baron is, right? It's you know, it's a sort of a rebel force person, right? They were actually good guys saying, the world's gotten completely out of control. And Rome had fallen by that point in time. And the church, yeah, they were present, but, you know, they were centered in Rome. And this is England, right? So the distance and the proximity controlled the amount of force. Plus, there's a body of water between them. And this is not in an age where we had amphibious invasion vehicles, right? So these, you know, rebel barons, they drafted up sort of this list of inalienable rights. It's like 60-something things, like 63 or so articles of how to behave. And it essentially said, first and foremost, we want to protect our religion. Second of all, we want to be protected from all these crazy taxes that you continually invent. I remember, as soon as sheets of paper, and this is probably not the right moment in history, but when sheets of paper were purchasable by the people, there was something called the stamp tax that was invented. This is the real deal, people. The stamp tax had two objectives. One, steal money from you, because you had to get every piece of paper stamped with the king's symbol. And if you had one sheet of paper in your house that didn't have this stamp on it, you were in trouble. But the second, more clever agenda was to be able to say, we get to come in your house with our soldiers and look at all your shit. Because back in the day, you had no computers. And so if you're going to plot against the king, you had to write it down. And so they would be able to look through all your pieces of paper and invade your privacy. And that's where we are right now, because it's all electronic. Now, King John had a bunch of issues going on in his life. And so he was looking for as much support as possible. And it was essentially when he was down and out because he had overtaxed, he had over-repressed his people. You know, these guys took a long time to write all this stuff up, and it had to be an epiphany in mankind, a whole civilization that just got sick and tired of this crap. Well, they draft this thing to push back the king. And then, of course, they know he's not going to do it. Now, the king at the time was actually ruling by something called force of will. And it was a set of laws that monarchs use to rule their people. And consequently enough, it was endorsed by the Pope and the Church, which essentially keep your subjects in line because you never know when we are going to need you people to convince your citizens to go fight a crusade for us because we need to expand the Catholic Church / taxation system. Remember, the brilliant thing is you have Rome having to send out legions to tax people, you know, defeat them, install a legion, and then you have a tax collector that goes around and steals from everyone, right? And then you have it metabolized up into a church where they have their own sovereign land, you know, right? The Vatican's its own country, right? Every major city, every major country has at least one city where it's sovereign. Washington, D.C., the District of Columbia is its own sovereign country because it reports back to Europe. London has its own segment that's like that as well. So we have carry forwards from this era, and if we were ever to wake up and take back this planet, we need to erase all of this legal protection that they've been able to construct around themselves. So they argue back and forth about Magna Carta, and the, you know, King John goes to the Pope. I think it was like Archbishop Canterbury, a very famous Pope. And there's another one that's, Archbishop Canterbury, I think, went to, Pope Innocent or something like that. Really weird, right? It's like the third or something like that. But anyway, he goes over and he's trying to get support. He's like, you know, shut these barons down. We can't have this thing where I cannot rule by the sheer serendipitous thought that comes into my brain. And no monarch wants to lose that power, right? But they weren't going to let off. And King John had already suffered a lot of losses to France at the time, so he was in trouble. He needed to not lose stability at his home, and so he capitulated. And that's when, in 1215, he signed this baby off. And that's where we have, for a brief second, an undisputed list of sovereignty-based rules that man would run by. And what's really strange about this, all right, is that every time he certified and his successors certified Magna Carta, because it immediately got, you know, triangulated and interpreted, and, you know, they just said, well, I think pretty much you could think that King John basically said, I'm going to tell them whatever they need to know just to shut them up, right? And so he started splitting hairs the second that he signed it, and each time, you know, King John actually ends up dying and giving off the authority to Henry III, and who then later, I think in like 1225, you know, recertified the Magna Carta in exchange for taxes, more taxes from the people. So he said, I'll give you your rights, but these taxes are going to need to be turned on. And of course, you know, it's that whole thing of freedom and liberty. We'll give up one to get the other when they're very, very similar, right? Liberty being freedom from government, freedom just being freedom in the world, being a sovereign human being, which we're going to get into next. So they recertify the Magna Carta over the next 100 years a couple times in exchange for taxes. All right. Then the thing just kind of gets beat up for the next 400 years. Until 1688, they bring it back and they put a stamp in it one more time, saying that this is what we want. But the problem is now the monarchs have gotten really hungry over those 400 years. Right? The Inquisition showed them that full-blown repression is just a decision away, right? And that's when the settlers, I mean, in 1688, we got a bunch of settlers in America. And they're, you know, the game between Europe and America, especially before we formed the country and gave it a name, you know, you have people that want to escape the tyranny of Europe, which now, again, is now globally growing back. Every single moment, or I should say minuscule mechanism of tyranny that grew up over Europe, say from 0 AD, right down the, all the way up until, you know, Magna Carta was made and then America was found. All those little tiny erosions of freedoms have all come back now, and it's all due to 9/11. I mean, every bit of it. London has 10 million cameras now. It's crazy, right? There's no Constitution, United States of America anymore. Really? You know, we have gun rights at this point, but they're still messing with us on those. Freedom of speech, it's sort of there. As long as you don't make any waves, you can talk and say everything that you want to say. But all the rest of them are gone, right? So this came up into the Americas. We pull off, and the whole thing is to reignite this Magna Carta thing. The Constitution was, a byproduct of, 1787 by the time it was completely ratified and turned on. Okay. You know, the Revolution War was like 27 years. People think it's like one overnight fireworks show and the whole country's here. No, it's like 27 years at least, right? And some people stress it a little bit higher than that because there were some skirmishes going on and there was a little break in between, all this other stuff. Whatever. It was a long, tumultuous battle. You mean, you realize that when the first shot is fired, I think it was at the Lexington Bridge, right? The first shot's fired, a child pops out of his mom, and he's 27 years old by the time this war's over. That's a long war, people. People didn't know anything but war in those lives. Okay, just like today. So the other thing that develops over this 2,000-year period, from zero to 2,000, is, you know, a legal system. Now, what's really, really funny about this is that we feel like we need to have some proof that we all made a decision. And we usually call that piece of proof different things, like a contract, a law, even a statute, which a statute isn't a law. But we have these mechanisms that we've invented that makes something okay to do. It's okay to do this. You can drink at 21. You cannot have sex with girls under 18. This is how they have gained sort of an inroad into the consciousness of man, is to take this legal system, which is written in a language called legalese. Anytime you read legalese, you'll know it, because everything stops making sense. And I'll tell you a little story. You know, like, Steve Jobs refused to sign contracts that were written in legalese, at least for some of the foundational steps of both Apple and Next. People gave him, I think when he did the deal with IBM, the story goes that they gave him like a 120-page contract. And the story goes as he looked at it, he said, "That's nice," and he threw it in the trash and sat down. He says, "I'm looking for like a 4-page thing. If we can't fit this contract in 4 pages, then you've hidden so much bullshit in that contract, it's not good for me." And he's right. There's a line in the original Willy Wonka's Chocolate Factory. The guy says, "Contracts are strictly for suckers," because he makes them sign a contract at the beginning of the show, and sure enough, it is for suckers. The writing got really tiny at the bottom, so you couldn't read it, and when the kid actually got to the end of the day and didn't die, he said, you broke the contract. You bumped into the fizzy lifting drinks machine. I had to be sterilized, and you lose everything. And, of course, my favorite scene almost in any movie is when he gives him back to Everlasting Gobstopper and says, "I'm not going to, which the subtext is, I'm not giving it to Slugworth, who's going to give me a bunch of money for it." And that's when Gene Wilder says one of my favorite lines in any film, which is, "So shines a good deed in a weary world." And the story behind that line is that they actually didn't have that line in the script, realized there was a big gap there, that if he just grabbed it off the table and said, you won the whole thing, it just wouldn't work right. And so they called a writer who I believe from London, they called him, and he was in New York in some acting studio, and they said, or something like that, and they said, we need a line, what's it going to be? And the guy was like, months away from having written this movie. I mean, he'd already written it and moved on with his life and just, wasn't in his mind's eye. And he's rattled that line off on the telephone, and boom, we have one of the best empathetic, wonderful moments in film. That's where we need to be after we ingest the world, right? So Magna Carta gets in place, and for a glimpse of a moment, people understand what freedom actually might feel like if we can all endorse this thing. And again, it was only in England, and then it was scrutinized the second it was created. So you can imagine how all the monarchs in Europe, France, Spain, Italy, Norway, all these folks, Germany, freaked the hell out, because they're like, don't let that shit come over here. We're a force of will mechanism over here, right? Well, that's why America becomes a huge problem for Europe. And that's why America's, the attempt to disarm America is huge. You need to understand that the same mechanisms that would fight Magna Carta in 1215 are the exact same factions and the exact same families and the exact same psychoses that are fighting gun ownership in America. The second that we can't help the world stay out of tyranny, then it's going to be lights out for the planet. We're going right back. I mean, if you haven't seen THX-1138, I would imagine that's their goal, which will probably turn into Brazil by the time it's over, right? So this legal system manifests over the world, and it goes much deeper than any of you know, which is where I'm going to start talking about the straw man theory. Straw man is just a word we call, or a title we give this crazy thing that's occurred. There's a whole group of people out there on the internet. If you look up straw man, you're going to get stupid definitions that are like clinical definitions. But if you look up straw man freedom, I think you'll find what you're looking for. And we'll try to post some videos on the Facebook page after this goes up so we can kind of get the discussion going here. But it goes something like this. You are a human. You are not a person. You just represent one. Weird, right? When your parents registered you with the government of the United States of America or whatever country you're from, and your parents received a birth certificate, unbeknownst to you, you became the owner of a person. Now, that piece of paper isn't alive, obviously, and they know it's not alive, which is why they've invented a legalese phrase called person. You're human. A person can be indicted and forced into all kinds of legal penalties, but a human can't. A human, which is what you and I are, the only thing that we are sovereignly bound to is common law. And common law, in terms of a human committing a sin to another human, is pretty damn simple. I can't kill you or harm you. I can't commit fraud against you. And that handles all that, steal your stuff, that sort of thing. It's really, really simple. But a person has to follow all the other legalese stuff. So if you just simply said everything written on planet Earth in legalese, and everything that tracks an asset in a full cap letter typing inside of a piece of paper, which is surrounded by legalese, right? If you take everything that's legalese and you just push it off to one side and say, all that stuff talks to itself. I'm over here. I'm a human being. I don't have to do anything with that stuff over there. You start to have a perspective how the world really is. So the straw man is the thing that has the copy of your name. We're, for legal reasons, in legal terms, you and I are a mixed case version of our name. So you write your name, capital first letters of your middle, first and middle last name, right? That's not a legal entity. All capitals is where you become a legal entity. And that's not what you're able to be physically. So that is a piece of paper off to the side, called a person. And that is the only thing that can pay a traffic ticket. That's the only thing that can pay taxes. That's the only thing that can engage in being ruled by law, being suggested by statutes, right? Statutes aren't laws. Statutes are really just sort of, if you believe in the statute, then you can abide by the statute. And if you subscribe to it and you put your person into the statute, then if this person who is vicariously responsible for everything you do as a human, right? It transposes to the person. Then you're legally bound to do whatever your piece of paper person is legally bound to pay the penalties. But it's not you physically. And it's not you legally. You just volunteer to do things on behalf of your person. Your driver's license is a picture of you on a piece of paper of your person. Isn't that interesting? You're loaning your person your image, but you're not legally that person. I know this is starting to sound like who's on first, right? It sounds a little crazy, but it's 100% true. If you wanted your child to be 100% sovereign in this world, doesn't matter what country you're born in, your child's born in, don't fill out a birth certificate. Obviously, there's some benefits that come with a birth certificate, but it's just up to you. You could move to a place in the world where you can just wake up, fish. I got friends of mine who retire. They're not terribly rich or anything, but they save up maybe like $100,000 and they go live in these tiny little islands in the Pacific with their spouse. Typically, they're the kind of people that didn't have children, or if they did, their children are way, way beyond their needs. But they wake up every morning, they cast a net, they grab fish. This is before Fukushima. They catch the fish, clean the fish, eat it. There's all kinds of indigenous fruit and vegetables. They pick that, get their fiber, get all their vitamins, and they go in a loop every single day. It's not for me, but some people do that. And that's a person being a human being outside of the straw man legal obligations. Now, we know how it really works in the real world, right? The tax code for individual wages in the United States of America is an elective, non-statute, non-law amendment to the Constitution known as the 16th Amendment, right? That formed the IRS and this whole thing of the Federal Reserve private for-profit banking system. So no person in the United States of America, and this is just me repeating Aaron Russo's findings with the former head of the IRS, no person actually is obligated to pay taxes on their earned wages. In the Constitution, it's said to be your property. However, you can volunteer. You can say, I'm a citizen of the United States, and I believe my country needs a slice of the pie to defend me, to build my roads, and all that kind of stuff. So you can volunteer and pay taxes. Now, the upshot is if you try not to pay your taxes, this is where we're going to get into the court system here of maritime law. If you try not to pay your taxes, well, you're just going to count the days until federal tax agents show up armed with guns and haul you away and take all your stuff and cash it in at 10 cents on the dollar. When you could have a Ferrari that's worth $300,000 and they're going to sell it for 30 grand just to fuck you over, right? When they could sell for 300, settle your debt, and you'd be out of there. Now, you should do it yourself if you had problems with the IRS, but they're bullies, all right, that most of their workers have no idea that this is actually written in their code as an elective thing. But if you try to take them to court and pull, okay, the documentation from the IRS to say, look, it says here for earned wages, it's optional. I don't have to do this. The court system is already predisposed to know that you're one of these assholes, quote unquote, right, who like sovereignty and all this other kind of stuff, that you're one of these guys that's fighting the system. And in order to have anyone rule on that law and rule on the situation, you have to go to a higher and higher level court. You really need to achieve Supreme Court escalation. And just for those of you who don't know, you have to get approval through filings to get your case approved to go up and approved to go up to get to the point where you could possibly win. But you'll never be allowed to get to the court level for them to rule on whether or not you're right or wrong. And so you're going to be stuck below that membrane losing. And that's why no one screws with the IRS. It's a bullying organization, which is now used as a political mechanism for the Democrats, especially, to go in and bully organizations that would resist the government in any way, shape, or form. And as soon as it switches to a red guy, it's going to potentially Donald Trump wouldn't do it, right? But don't be so sure. They may be running by a different organization. Maybe they're run by the military-industrial complex, but they're used as a repression mechanism to bully people to do what you want them to do. You just start having problems, right? But that's not what we're going to solve the problem. We're not going right to the tippy top of crime and say, you know, Mr. Al Capone, I think you selling drugs is bad. You know, you're not going to do that. You're going to go systemically up through the minds of man, right? So now let's get into maritime law. And a lot of you are going to go, what the hell are you talking about? There used to be this thing where navies had diplomats on them, and navies would fight tremendous wars because you could pull a whole armada of boats up with those cannons off the side, right? And they could fire, you know, barrage after barrage after barrage into your city, and they would destroy and kill your families until you literally gave up. And this is just the way it worked. And so if you wanted to sign a peace agreement, you needed to meet in one location, and based on the legal system of where you are physically, you would sign some paperwork, some treaty, which was already pre-designed by the winners, right? All right. Now, you would probably assume if I said to you, we're going to sign a peace treaty in my country in New York City, that whatever laws apply to New York City and the United States of America are going to apply to us while we're signing this agreement. And you would be right. But if I went to your land and sat in your area, you would assume that the inverse is true. I'm under your law. And the winners are always the ones that are, have the flag running over the head, right? They used to push two boats together, and the losers would be pulled over to the winner's boat, and they would sign a treaty under the flag of their country. And the flag was the stamp on the ground on that deck of that ship to say, this is the law system that we are signing this agreement under. So even though something might not be illegal in your country, it is in mine, and so therefore you're capitulating to my legal system. And under extreme cases, they bring up a third boat if the French weren't involved, right? The French actually tend to be responsible for a lot of the treaties that we write today because their language is considered a dead language, which means that their French words for their legalese haven't evolved for hundreds of years. And so they say, we're going to write in French because there's no one that can come back later and say, this didn't quite mean what we thought it was because the French definitions changed and blah, 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 blah. So sometimes the French helped. But now you're thinking, well, that's an old story about how people used to settle disputes. What does it have to do with today? What if I told you it had to do with everything today? That everything, at least, I'm just going to go from the United States of America. Everything that happens in the United States of America is based on this maritime law situation. The reason why the District of Columbia is its own sovereign country is because it is not governed in any way by the Constitution of the United States or any of its sub-articles and amendments. The District of Columbia is run by corporate bylaws of the United States of America Corporation. And every single state, city, town has a Dun & Bradstreet list, and every single state, city, and town is a corporation in the United States of America. You simply are not allowed on the map unless you form a corporation. And once you write your organization in all caps and file it with the United States of America Corporation, you are no longer an owner of your own stuff. When you register your car, you're giving your car to the state. You're actually saying this is your property now. Interesting, right? You know, if you buy a car and you, and again, the law tells, supposedly, right, these car dealerships that they're not allowed to give you the car off the lot unless it's registered, unless it's been given to the state. It's absurd. You should be able to pick up a car, take it home, and just look at it. You never drive it. It's in your living room. You're some crazy rich guy, and you're just looking at it. You should be able to do that in America, but you can't. Crazy. Because they're going to say, well, that car exists, and if it exists, it has to have a license plate on it. Even if you try to archive the car, you still got to pay for the registration of the car. It's crazy. Your children are the property of a corporation called the United States of America Corporation. The reason why the Supreme Court can rule down onto the Constitution is that they do not answer to the Constitution at all. Every court system in America has a very intense legal system right behind the judge, hanging off a pole, right in plain view. But most of you see it, and you have no idea what you're looking at. Everybody seems to know what the American flag looks like. You know, even people who hate us know what the American flag looks like. I forgot the woman's name who sewed the first one. I'm not going to try to butcher her name. But the first flags that ever flew over this country just had flag inside them. That was it. It was a border. That was it. Nothing special on the border. And then this legal system came over to infiltrate and destroy this country. And that's when this legal corporation transformation of everything in the United States of America had to be a corporation, otherwise it wasn't allowed to exist, transformed everything. And we have something called the gold-fringed flag. And you're going to get a lot of people have a problem with this knowledge, but it's absolutely 100% a legal distinction between that which is ruled by the Constitution and that which is ruled by the corporate bylaws. of the bankers who own the corporation that has a Dun & Bradstreet listing. Okay. The gold fringe flag signifies that once you walk into a room, just like the maritime law thing I told you about, which you think, it doesn't matter to me what these guys did back in pirate days. Imagine that the courtroom that you're walking into, and some corporations have this as well in their lobbies as an honorary symbol. Just think of the floor of the room as the deck of a ship. And the flags behind the judge are the flags that would be on a mast hanging way high in the air, signifying what country they represent. A gold-fringed flag in the United States of America, and there are state flags that are gold-fringed as well. That means that they are the corporate flag of the entities that they represent. Of course, they steal the insides from the region that they're representing so that the people don't realize. But I could say this much. Legally speaking, the gold-fringed American flag in America could have a picture of Fozzie Bear in the middle, all right? And it would be as legal as the one with the American flag stuck in the center. That's why we're not safe with the way that the world works today. And that's why we have to get to a point where we feel like the rebel barons, right, that forced King John to take their sovereignty, written down in 60-plus little sayings, and enforce it. So here's your challenge. Humanity is addicted to a bunch of shit. Right? Humanity is addicted to tons of crap that humanity doesn't need. If you try to take this knowledge out there and try to get someone to change their mind, the inherent inertia in trying to move their mind is going to be like walking up to your nearest house and just push on it to see if you can move it a couple inches, right? Unfortunately, I believe personally that the only way society is going to free itself of tyranny is to suffer, and suffer for a tremendous length of time. So if any of you know how to infect the mind of people with this knowledge, you're bigger than me, because I don't know how to do it. I can definitely say that technology, social media, cell phones have destroyed. I'm going to repeat this over and over and over again. When a phone rang back in the day, you made a decision as to whether or not you were ready to pick it up. Today, we have this nervous tick. Phone rings, I have to answer. People complain a lot about telemarketers. We have caller ID now, and people still complain about telemarketers. You know how easy this works? Don't answer the phone if you don't know who the hell it is, unless you're at a business phone. That's as simple as it is. Hey, if it's a friend of yours, they're going to leave a voicemail, and you can listen to the voicemail, and you can get back to them. But you know what? People who have your number usually text if they can't find you. Social media. People feel obligated to monitor every single thing that comes across their home feed, anytime they're ever tagged in anything, which I guess you should monitor, depending on what kind of friends you have. But when you say, look, do you realize that your birth certificate makes you a piece of property of the state? You have so blown the mind of an average human being that to then elaborate beyond that point is laughable. It's just like you're just going to spin your wheels and you're going to look like a freak. If someone were to come up to you, and I bumped into a couple once that was really into this don't pay your taxes thing. And they were trying to do it. They were trying to figure out how to not pay taxes. And I think they ended up splitting up. And the woman went back to her normal life. And the guy who was sort of spearheading this, he ended up moving to Asia. Ended up, I guess, probably paying taxes over there, but less than he pays here or whatever. He just couldn't stand it anymore. And his real trouble was that he didn't want to build a skill set to get a job. And he really didn't want to work anymore. And so he was just sort of trying to be a deadbeat person. It was weird. But he wanted all the amenities of being, you know, having money. It's really strange. But when you think about this whole problem of freedom and humanity, I want to send you off with some homework. because I'm at a dead end with this in terms of just some magic little cute phrase I could put together for you guys. But here's what I would say. Pull back to the beginning of how you envision man to either been a pack animal like lions, where there's one dude and, you know, like monkeys do it, right? There's one lead monkey and an alpha male monkey, and then he gets all the chicks. Maybe we started out like that. But however you transform in your mind the authoritarianism that came across mankind, the subjugation, whether it be willingly subjugated or forced on people, try to get into the genetics of how we slipped up to the point where we actually are now being ruled. And see if you can't figure out a way to you know, put your hand in the water as like a little udder, you know, and curve the boat just a little bit to the point we can sort of start splitting the atom on this whole thing. Because it's a tough one. And what's crazy is it's legally right in our face, right? You know, conspiracies about the moon and 9/11, you know, it's sort of in your face if you're willing to learn the science to make it in front of your face. But those things are all left up for interpretation, chemtrails, well, just because they're in the sky and, you know, one guy can say it's WD-40 falling out of the back, right? But what I just talked about, the history of Magna Carta, it's just black and white, other than the fact that they called the guys who wrote it a bunch of assholes by calling them, you know, rebel barons. And they were the good guys, right? You've got the Constitution of the United States of America, which, if nothing else, until 1913, when the 16th Amendment destroyed this country, right? It worked great. It made a country prosper out of a bunch of immigrants that didn't even know each other, right? Okay, so today, we've got complete corporatism, banker-controlled. And we say bankers, they own the hospitals, the pharmaceutical companies, the insurance companies, they own your politicians, both local and national. This guy, I'd never heard of this guy, like Scott Walker or something like this, drops out of the election because of money problems today. Never heard of the guy in my life, don't care who he is. But the funny thing is, or the pathetic thing is that he can't run for office because he doesn't have enough money. Not a new problem, but think about that. I don't know the guy, but what if there was a person in they're running for office and they're the most qualified in the world, the most sociable, the most quick on their feet, but they can't get money off some corporation. They can't run for president, right? So we are going to have to do our best to try and wake people up. And I think what you might end up doing as a formula for whatever trick you come up with is let's just inform for now. Let's just inform. Not much we can do about changing it right now, but if we inform, then that rise in the belly of man, which created the push, the force, you know, what is it, the Articles of the Baron that turned into Magna Carta, maybe we can get that to happen again. Just like Magna Carta, it suffered for 400 years and then was finally re-signed up in the late 1600s. So, let's not wait 400 years. Let's wait 4 years. Let's get this baby back on track, and at least in America. And if you're in Europe, well, I'm not sure where your laws are over there. But if you don't like what you see, and if you suffer from the same sort of, you know, maritime law situation, if your flags have gold fringes on them, if your country is a corporation and not a sovereign country, if you're still creating a person when you're born. I was born in Germany on an American base. And, you know, I have my birth certificate. It has an all-seeing eye capstone pyramid on it. It has Margaret Thatcher's signature on it, which is funny. She didn't obviously sign it, but someone stamped it with her name. We need to heighten our awareness to figure out if we ever get a chance to reset the planet, what are we going to do next? Do we keep this methodology? Do we get rid of it? This is the loosest one I've ever done. But I think I've been wanting to do maritime law forever. One of the most popular articles for a long time on onepagenews.com was one that we wrote about maritime law. It's a teeny tiny half page little thing with some pictures. But it's just, I don't usually like to complain about something unless I have a solution for you. In this particular episode, I don't know what to say. Educate your friends and your family. Don't try to tell them to run out with pitchforks and change the world. Just understand that when they walk into a room with gold fringe American flags or whatever country you're from, whatever laws you thought protected you aren't in that room. They're being observed onto you, right? Well, over this, you know, it's almost like bring me your constitution and I'll read it to you. And that's what I do as a judge. But we have big judges up there called the Supreme Court in America, which they may actually make this particular rule on your sheet of paper not enforceable. What if I try to take the NSA to court for surveying, you know, my cell phone calls? How's that going to go? Not very well, right? Because I'm going to walk right into their court systems where it's all legal. Well, the Military Commissions Act, which is a legal document into the Corporation of the United States of America, said it was okay for them to do it to these poor persons underneath the Constitution. If you haven't been, go to mkultureradio.com. That's all I'm going to say. Thank you to absolutely everyone for subscribing, to watching these, to liking these. Thank you for the request, Tracy, for doing this. Let's keep it going. Keep the conversation moving forward. Again, we're trying to teach you the rules that rule you, but sometimes us brilliant MK Ultra guys, we don't have the answers at all sometimes. And this is where we just have knowledge with no answers, and we don't have all the knowledge either. So let's work together to spread the information. Be good to yourself. Be good to someone else. Over now. See you in the next episode.